Do you want to try the intro today? Lindsay said you should try the intro. You don't have to if you don't want to.
I don't even know what the intro is. What does one do for an
intro? It's just welcome to Super Together and then their names.
You say. All right. Welcome to Super Together. I'm Ginger Rothis.
And I'm James Cochran.
All right, today that was a lot of pressure.
No, you did great. You did great. Today we're talking about dating, but a very specific kind of dating.
Yes. Dating in quarantine.
Where you're not allowed to leave your house.
Dating with kids around.
Oh, yeah, dating with kids around. And I think it might, you know, there's an element of this that is, because I was thinking about people that are not necessarily in romantic relationships.
Oh, that's so funny. And I was thinking you meant dating with the person you're living with.
Like, no, that too.
We should date again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, there's yeah, that's for sure. So funny.
But I'm thinking there are a lot of people that this applies to, and it applies to them, I think, in slightly different ways, but there are some sort of general principles that probably tie it all together.
Totally. I love this. I love that you, yeah. Because for the listeners know, James texted me the topic idea and then we hit record. So yeah. you're hearing it
that
all.
That is generally how we prepare. We sort of pull from our, it's a reservoir of expertise that we hold in our minds. So I had the thought in my head that this would apply to married couples who are connected to each other in relationship and under quarantine under the same roof, sort of bound by the same four walls.
Perfect. Okay.
I was also thinking that it could apply to people who are in dating relationships and are not in the same four walls under the same roof.
Love
I was
that.
Also thinking yes. It could apply to people who are in relationships that are non-romantic with people who are outside of their homes. So I think what I really want us to consider, maybe before we begin, because I don't know what we'll title this episode, probably something like dating while in quarantine.
Yeah, perfect. That covers all of those bases.
Right. But I guess maybe we start with defining what do we mean when we say dating? Because I teach a premarital class sometimes and this question comes up, like, what is a date and how do we differentiate a date from other types of interactions?
Okay, good question. So I came into this with the assumption of dating somebody that you are in quarantine with just because you can't get away to date. So for me, when I think about that and am asked the question, what is dating? To me, it is reconnecting. It's a chance to connect with somebody in conversation, in one-on-one time, in just relating in the sense of connecting, heartfelt connection with somebody.
One of the things that I challenge my couples with to think of sometimes is novelty, that there are meant to be experiences that feel new to you. Now, even if we're going to the same restaurant that we've been to 100 times, there is this opportunity to learn new things about each other, to have this deeper, broader understanding of each other than we had going into the interaction. I think about how people have date nights. They have babysitters that are sort of assigned to a particular night so that they can be intentional about that. So there's a lot of these elements that are present, and I'm wondering if we can sort of unpack what it looks like to do this with the boundaries that we are sort of faced with. Because I think that one of the challenges I know people are confronting is, okay, I'm in quarantine. How does that mean I create like work-life balance? Like my job is now in my basement, you know? So how do I make sure that I'm not in my basement all the time, or I'm actually in the basement when I need to be in the basement and not, you know, just roaming about the house. So I think we could say that the same thing applies to how we date, because I think that it would be easy just to say, oh, like, well, we're dating all the time because we're spending all of our time together. So I think there's lots of stuff to unpack here. But I think if you're listening to this and you're listening to with the idea of like, I want to find ways to create these kinds of spaces with my partner, I just don't know how to do it in the context of quarantine, I think that's going to be probably most of what our focus is.
It's so good, because when you when you texted this topic idea, it spurred the thought in me of, oh yeah, I need to be intentional about dating my husband during this time. I hadn't even thought about that. And then I also had a call with a client who's a young woman in her 20s trying to find somebody to date during this time. And I hadn't considered until I talked to her how difficult that is right now also.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so, swiping is a whole thing.
Right.
I mean, it's a mess to begin with, and I can't even imagine the swiping
now.
Right. Part of what is intriguing about this idea to me is to say, are there any reasons we can say, you and I have talked about this idea of there being something essential in being in the same physical space. Mm-hmm. And there's some kind of energetic presence that is missed when we're just connecting over the internet, Zoom, these types of things.
Yes.
So part of me wonders, what are the essential components of dating, and are any of them lost if we're sort of bound up within our four walls? And I don't know that that's the case. So I don't know if we begin, because I think it would be one thing to say for you and I to go back and forth and say, here are the 10 date ideas, you know, and just so you know, if you Google that, there's lots of those, you know, 10 date ideas for quarantine, you know, take a trip to Belize on your computer, and, you know, have a candlelit dinner, you know, just, and honestly, I don't want to say cliched, but it's stuff that you could probably think of if you spent more than a few minutes thinking about it. What I want us to consider is, what are those constituent parts, those essential elements of connection that can be found even in the midst of quarantine that people can lean into, whether they're, you know, whether they have like three kids running around and don't have the same kind of flexibility as people that are doing that remotely, or, you know, whatever sort of resources you occupy. So I'll start and say that I think that one of the sort of essential elements to me is undivided attention, where your partner is your exclusive focus, your partner's exclusive focus is you. And that might feel like it's hard to come by in a space where, again, let's say you have kids running around. One of the things that has been interesting for me is that I feel like I've had a Zoom meeting every single night this week, whether it's been like a Bible study or a happy hour or a small group, or, you know, just seeing family or friends that we haven't seen in a minute. And that is, it's easy for your calendar to fill up with things like that. And it is hard to create intentional space where you have each other's undivided attention in that kind of context. I think that, again, it could be easy for our calendars to fill up, but recognizing that we need to be able to create space to have each other's undivided attention, that's one of these essential components.
Yeah, I completely agree. I had, as you started talking, I had paying attention to one another as one of those essential. And I think that's exactly what you just described, is you better articulated what I meant by that. The tendency to schedule a lot of things right now is making me think of, you know, some of those posts going around of like, what do you want to return to when we return to normal, and being really intentional about, you know, what was this quarantine good for you personally or for your relationship? And then let's be really conscious when we return to normal about what we choose. And then what you just described is exactly what I'm seeing happen with both of us and even Rob, is this embedded belief that we need to be productive. And so, and that our calendars are open, therefore we should put things in them. And I am finding an embedded belief that I should be using every minute to accomplish something. Yeah. And it's come up a lot in me during this time. An awareness of that feel that time is of the essence and I need to be producing something in every moment. And I think that that's where we begin to lose track, lose our way again. Mm-hmm. And so we've changed the format, and we had a week of getting used to that. And then quickly we jump right back into our old patterns with new technology, which is fascinating to me, that our human behavior goes that direction. So yeah, I think undivided attention is probably what makes a date a date. Mm-hmm. For me,
I think it would be easy for people in this space to say, oh, well, my typical pattern of dating my partner looks like going to dinner and a movie. And in a context where neither of those are allowed, it could be easy to say, oh, well, I just won't date my partner then. You know, like that just won't be something we do. And ultimately, I think I probably mentioned this idea of triangulation. I know I have. And that the simplest version of triangulation is triangulating about the weather, where we point our attention toward a third thing because it is intense to confront somebody directly with your emotional experience. And when we're, if we're honest about it, dinner and a movie, while a lot of fun, is just, it's a lot of times it's triangulation. It's let's give ourselves something else to do besides being fully present with each other so that we don't have to lay bare our emotional reality to our partner and be vulnerable and intimate in that way. So I think that it is, we are being called in this moment to a deeper kind of connection. And it is not the kind of connection, generally speaking, that is born out of going to dinner and going to a movie. It's we're going to have to dive into conversation. We're going to have to get really intimate with each other. And that's a hard thing to do. And so first, just naming that this is weird and different and difficult, you know, as you mentioned, this idea of things that we remove from our lives or have been removed from our lives and how quickly we return to those things. I was thinking about this in terms of like an elimination diet, like Whole30 or something like that, where it's like, okay, I'm going to cut out all these things from my life. And I'm not endorsing elimination diets in any capacity. But if you've gone on an elimination diet, what you know is that you're not supposed to just introduce everything back again once things return to normal. You probably will get really sick, but you also kind of defeat the purpose of the elimination diet. We have this unprecedented opportunity to eliminate so many things from our lives, some of which we are missing dearly and grieving, some of which we are blessed to be able to eliminate from our lives. And I think the question is, what are we going to do with that space? And what is most important to us in that space? So really, if we're looking at this as like step one, how to date your partner in the context of quarantine, it's recognize that if your relationship really matters to you, that part of what you want to be intentional about doing is creating space to do that in the context of quarantine. And really, I mean, you can call it a date time if you want to, but you're just saying, hey, I'm going to devote these 1, 2, 3 hours to the exclusive connection with my partner. So that's step one. So, okay, we've created the space. It's in the calendar. What else do we need to make sure that we're doing, that we're paying attention to if we're going to connect with our partners in this way?
Well, I'm thinking about earlier in this conversation, you said this experiencing something new together, or there's a level of discovery or excitement or, you know, something that I'm going to get out of this. And maybe it's discovering something new about your partner. So maybe it's, you know, conversations that we want to have, but it's intentionally trying to discover something new. Mm-hmm. And so when you said that, I was thinking of, do we do that in our dating life? And we really do. It's like that makes it different than just sitting at home together, right? If in our prior lives, we would try a new restaurant or go see a new movie or have a new experience. And that somehow justified the date, the getting a babysitter or the. Yeah. And so when you said that, I was like, yeah, is that necessary? Does that make a date a date? Hmm. And, you know, this ability to deeper connect may have us also reconciling what counts. What am I trying to get out of this? Or why? Why is this worth doing? Sure. And so valuing that we can't go see a new movie, or we could, I guess, on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's that we can't go try a new restaurant. Well, maybe we could do takeout. You know, so it's the looking through the criteria of what makes a new experience new and what makes a date a date. And then how do we create that? And I think maybe it's the learning something new is the deeper longing there.
Yeah, I think part of what we're kind of walking around is this idea of going deeper. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that is a depth born out of I'm finding out something new about you. So if we, I'm imagining this analogy where we're mining together. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes when you're, if I was to go in my backyard and my wife and I have got shovels together, sometimes we're going to find gold. Sometimes we're going to find buried treasure or the skull of a polar bear inexplicably in our backyard in Kansas. But a lot of the time, I mean, the longer you know each other, it's just going to be more dirt. Now, ultimately, I'm thinking about, you know, a hole has this kind of concave, you know, feature to it where it's, you know, it's narrower at the bottom than it is at the top. So I'm thinking the deeper we dig, the closer we're going to get together, just because the digging is something that draws us into closer proximity to each other. I just made that analogy up right.
That's good. Actually, I think that's working.
Now, as I consider that, so certainly novelty creates opportunity for connection. If you and I are both trying oysters for the first time, our experience of that, our reactions to that, the associations that we draw from that, whether we spit them out because they're distasteful to us, whether we enjoy them more than anything, we're learning something new about ourselves and about each other, and we can both bear witness to that. So certainly I think novelty facilitates this opportunity to understand ourselves and our partners better. I also wonder, though, if part of the sense of growing deeper in relationship with each other, maybe it's just doing the same things, but with enough focus on each other and what really matters, that we create those opportunities. Because I think when you talked about this idea of what counts, my wife and I, we have two small kids. And so anytime we were to go on a date that was out of the house, we had to get childcare. Now here's how this would go down. The babysitter shows up. We want to ask as little of our babysitters as possible because we want to be able to use them a lot. Use them in the good word. We're paying them generally. So what that often means, yeah. What that often means is that, like, we take care of dinner, we kind of get bedtime started, and maybe the babysitter, you know, will stay up with them for a little bit, read a book, watch a show, and then, you know, put them to bed. So it's like 6:30, 7 o'clock. So we go out to dinner, and then dinner's over, and now we're looking at the prospect of, okay, do we want to go see a movie? Because if we do, it's going to start at like 8:45, and then we're going to get home at like 11:30, and then we're going to be really tired because that's way past our bedtime. And then this sort of opposite internal narrative arises where we say to ourselves, well, we have to make it worth it. We have to make it count, as you said. Like this, we've got the date night, we have to do something that is different than what we would usually do. And so sometimes that in and of itself will compel us to go see a movie because we don't usually have the opportunity to do that. And part of me wonders if that is if that's faulty logic, you know, so to speak. And I think it ultimately points to what do we want really out of a date? Because if it's just to absorb novel content, we can do that at home. And yet we sort of imagine ourselves in these scenarios where it's like, oh, well, I have to go out and absorb it in this particular way. So I guess I just wonder, is it possible to find ourselves, okay, so we've set aside some space and we're trying to say, what I really want is to draw myself into more intimate, into deeper relationship with you. So I guess, I don't know, how could we guide people toward drawing into deeper connection with each other, maybe absent access to some of those novel experiences?
Yeah, I think it's a conversation with the question of what would feel like a win to you? You know, what would feel like a date to you? And that's a conversation for each person in the partnership, is what do you need? Or what are you looking for? So when we look at this value assessment of, was it worth the price of a babysitter? Was it worth the effort? Was it worth showering for? Was it worth getting dressed? Was it, you know, that is kind of that value assessment that each person needs to make. And I think a conversation of like, what do you need this to be to feel like it mattered, it counted, or it was worth doing? And that may be different to each partner. And then project is that we try to meet the needs of the other one, or that we at least are reasonable with trying to compromise and make sure both people get what they need out of this time.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that is probably, I mean, that's something we should be doing during all of our dates, but it feels right. So, if we're talking about a relationship as being some level of, you know, I sacrifice some of me for the sake of you, and you sacrifice some of you for the sake of me, and there's that sort of covenantal, connectional kind of dynamic, then approaching a space where dates might need to be a space where we restore sanity. I've heard from so many people, like, I'm doing this to maintain my sanity. I'm doing this so that I can maintain my sanity. And I'm just thinking, like, we've got a lot of sanity maintenance going on, and that's good. Please find the thing.
We're all on the verge of insanity.
Right.
Yeah.
But when we think about, you know, a normal date could be a space where we look at our partner and say, hey, what do you need? Because I think here's what I need. And what's so interesting to me is sometimes that might be, I need to stuff my face full of Milk Duds and watch things explode on a gigantic screen. Sometimes it might be that. But if we think about, if our outcome is to strengthen our relationship, then I don't know that that will always be what it is. I think a lot of times it'll be, you know, I just really need for someone to hear what it's like to be me right now. Someone that I don't have to defend myself to, someone that knows me better than anybody, someone that can soothe some of my fears, my anxieties, my insecurities, and creating those kinds of spaces. Now, I'll go ahead and say that for some people listening to that might feel like pie in the sky kind of aspirational, because that's not necessarily the kind of self-awareness we bring to an interaction. But man, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could begin conversations where before we go on a date, we say, okay, now what context is going to support that outcome? Is it going to be that we sit on a couch together and we say, here are five things that I can't get out of my head right now? One of them might be, I can't get out of my head how crazy Tiger King is. That show is out of control and I can't handle it. Number two is, I am really scared about my sister who is about to have a baby. And I don't know what it's going to look like for her to do that without the support that she could have depended on in a, you know, pre-COVID world. Number three is, I feel like I'm gaining weight. Number four, you know, and we can name these experiences. I mean, that might be that could be a date. I know that sounds bizarre. But if we're talking about how do we answer the questions that you were putting forward, what is it that we really need? That feels like a fresh idea. Copyright that. That's good.
So yeah, what would feel like a win? I think I've been asking myself that a lot too, is like, what feels like a win for you today? Like, what do you, just because the assessments, the rules of the game seem to have changed. But what I heard you describing too requires some introspection and self-awareness, which is really important too, which is, you had the ability in that example to say, this is what I need. I'm aware of what I need. And so sometimes that piece is hard too, of I don't even know what I need, but I'm out of sorts. And so that vulnerability with somebody is important. I was also thinking about, you know, if you feel like in your relationship, one person is always getting what they want, then you might not like this question of what do you need? Because you already feel like it's a little one-sided. So in that context, maybe it looks like some conversations around taking turns or trade-offs, or, you know, let me design Tuesday night's date time and you design Thursday night's date time. And, you know, but something, it's also important that we balance that each person in the partnership is getting what they need and being honored, and that we're each doing our job to honor what the other person needs.
Yeah. I think that speaks to me about, you used the word that I think is most applicable, which is balance. And sometimes we might need to name our need for balance, you know, the sense of, hey, I feel like I've been giving, and not from a place of blame, but from a place of just, this is my assessment of reality. I've got very little left, you know, in me. And so I think I might need to be selfish tonight, you know, because I don't know that I have it in me to outpour anymore. So absolutely sort of assessing kind of where we feel within that, that place of balance or imbalance. So it strikes me that we're naming, I think, some of these essential elements that feel true. And then again, these feel true to me inside or outside of quarantine, but inside of quarantine, they guide us to different places because the options obviously are different. Me saying, okay, well, again, in a non-quarantine world, I say, we need to set aside time where we can focus exclusively on each other. Now, maybe that means you need a babysitter. Maybe that means we need to carve out time in our calendar. And now that we've done that, we need to ask, what looks like a win for each of us? What is it? What do we really need in this space? Because it might be different than it was last week or that what it will be next week. And again, sometimes maybe that's going to a movie. Sometimes that's going apple picking. Sometimes that's sitting on the couch. You know, what's funny is on Christmas Eve, we got a couch delivered to our house that my wife had gotten 2 or 3 weeks before at Nebraska Furniture Mart. And it came with a pillow that we did not know was coming with it. It came with a bunch of like kind of throw pillows, but one of these throw pillows says, and I'm not kidding, it said, let's stay home. And we thought that's kind of cute. Yeah. Let's stay home. Like let's stay home and relax. And now it is like, that is our life's motto, which is let's stay home. Cause we can't go anywhere. So sometimes what that's you need funny. Is to look at that pillow and say, yes, let's stay home. So then as we explore that, I'm wondering if there are, you know, tips, tools, strategies, tactics. I always misuse strategies and tactics, but you know, I'm in terms of which word is more appropriate.
Right.
So I usually just say them together and then people will think like, oh, so he recognizes that they're different. And
different.
Then
they think that's like, I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a college professor who swore that it was pronounced metaphor.
Oh, interesting.
And he like, that was a hill he was prepared to die on. He was like, you know, it's actually metaphor and everybody says it wrong when they say metaphor.
That's
and I'm
funny.
Like, okay, guy, I mean, you're the professor. I mean, so
I'm just
you know,
worried I'm getting like, I'm always worried of like, if I'm giving an example, is that a metaphor or an analogy? So it's, so you're strategic and tactic. You're good.
Okay. Sounds good. So I'm thinking about some ideas that could be helpful to couples. First of all, Google. I think that it can be difficult to intuit a solution. Right. And again, we've been given this expectation of romantic life where it's supposed to be easy, right? We're supposed to have the ideas. We're supposed to be able to put everything together. Romantic comedies and sitcoms and everything kind of give you this idea that, oh yeah, like, you know, everybody's able to sort of manufacture these ideas. When my daughter a couple months ago got slime in her hair, you know, like the homemade slime stuff, she got that in her hair. And my wife's first reaction was, okay, we're going to have to cut off all of her hair. Mm. And then I was thinking like, okay, well, maybe not. Have we Googled how to get slime out of hair? Because surely we are not the first people to confront this problem.
Right.
And then she did. And then we found a solution and we didn't have to cut off all my daughter's hair. So I say that to say, if you find yourself saying, okay, we've set aside the space, we kind of have a sense of what we need, but we feel like we need to fill in those gaps. Don't put all the pressure on yourself to manufacture those ideas. And if you don't feel like going to Google and, you know, browsing through all of that, ask people in your life that you're close to. Crowdsource it on Facebook. Look through some old books or something. I don't know. I mean, but generally speaking, you do not have to pull it all out of a hat yourself. I almost went a different place with that metaphor, but didn't.
So my version of the slime story is a Barbie house that Lauren got my daughter, I mean, years ago when it was like the Barbie dream house for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it was the instructions were horrible. It was a hard thing to put together. And we, you know, instead of ruining Christmas, we thought there has to be another parent out there that has struggled with putting this thing together. Mm-hmm. And so we crowdsourced. And there are dads who created YouTube videos for other dads of how to put together this, I won't be bleeped again, this stupid dollhouse. And and that we have that joke now between us of like, there's got to be a YouTube video for this. So when we get stuck, that's, the crowdsourcing thing is important for all of us to realize. And I like what you're saying about we don't have to make this harder than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. There are resources.
Yeah. Another thought that I've had is to try and take some of the decision-making pressure off yourself. And that can look like in an environment where you, like, let's say you have a sense of what you need and you know it sort of falls within to several categories. You know, so we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. Flip a coin, roll a die, ask Alexa to pick a number between 1 and 3. Alexa is very good at doing that. And part of what that does, it takes a lot of that pressure off. So that decision is kind of out of my hands. And that will help point you in the direction of an experience that, again, will probably be fine. What I always tell people that are having trouble making decisions is if you're having trouble deciding between one or two things, two or three things, what it usually means is that one of them is not overtly better than any of the others. So you really can't make a wrong decision. You won't know, your future self isn't going to look back and say like, oh, well, it would have gone better if we had done this other thing. You'll never be able to know that. So taking some of that decision-making power and offloading it onto some other chance thing, if you don't care so much about it, allowing your partner to make the decision. But a lot of times we get caught up in, okay, this time is so precious and so important, we have to do the very best thing. And that can create a lot of anxiety for us to the point where sometimes we don't make a decision, or sometimes we way overthink the decision, you know, minimize our amount of time, or we don't approach the process at all.
Or end up in an argument and then ruin the whole tone of what you were trying to achieve, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Out of frustration. Yeah, I love that. I think that you mentioned, too, this kind of work-life balance new model with all of us working from home. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as well, that this is a slippery slope for us to just go into our corners and, you know, do our work because it's right here in front of us. And so I was thinking also when in that term or in that context, when I was thinking about another thing that defines a date is this planning ahead, looking forward to something. Dates to me are something that we intentionally look forward to and plan, as you're saying. And so that work-life balance piece might be able to be addressed by having a plan and not just letting the days drift away and then drift into one another. And then we suddenly realize it's been weeks and we haven't intentionally sat down and connected with one another. So there's a planning element, I think, to dating that's important or looking forward to it. That's part of the excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've said in previous podcasts, the idea of, you know, getting the grilled cheese sandwich and the tomato soup to line up, that they're on
that's
the same
right.
schedules. And I think that comes from planning and intentionality, because again, just your best efforts might not be enough if you do not have some kind of structure to them. It's been a common joke through this social distancing season where people are like, oh, I don't really know what day it is and I don't know what month it is anymore. And just time is kind of flying. And how long have we been doing this? Has it been a year? Or, you know, just that to me points to this idea that if there are things in your life that you really want to be a part of your life, you have got to find a way to schedule them, because the time is not working in the same way that it usually does. So I think you're absolutely right. Getting something on the calendar, getting a calendar, you know, doing something that allows you to pay attention to it. You know, like I'm thinking about, you know, Castaway or, you know, a desert island movie where, you know, you've got like the
tally marks for each
day that's gone by. Creating something like that. So, okay, you do the tally marks and then every time you do the cross tally at day 5, that's when you have a date.
Good.
Even if it's that simple or lacks sophistication to that degree, something that allows you to name that, I think, is going to be important.
Yeah. And know that it's coming. And so, you know, so I was also thinking about those listening that are, that don't have a partner in the house and are trying to, you know, have hope that they will be able to meet somebody after this is over and that they, but hope in the kind of solitude and loneliness they might be feeling right now.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
We embraced that question a minute ago where we were asking, how do we acknowledge the parts of this that are good for us and the parts of this that are bad for us? And I think that if you are somebody who is single and doesn't want to be single, that you are actively seeking a companion, that is a hard thing to be doing, to be actively seeking a companion. And it is also difficult to be single if what you want most is a companion. But that to me feels like part of the work of a season like this is to say you are allowed in this moment to really explore what it is to be you, what it is you really want in a partner. And, you know, we went through the whole Love is Blind podcast, but really in there, we were embracing the question, like, what does it look like to develop a relationship with somebody when contact isn't really possible? And certainly, you know, a lot of dating begins online anyway. So there are opportunities to continue to lean into that. But I also would want to circle back to this idea of, and this may be the subject of future podcasts as we continue through this quarantine season, but what does it look like to reconnect with non-romantic people in our lives, people that we've maybe lost touch with or we want to have more contact with? I like to think of them as wedding people, you know, the people that you might see at a wedding from time to time, but you only ever see at weddings and you say, man, it would be great if we spent more time together. And then no one ever plans anything. No one ever calls anybody.
That's awesome. Yeah, so it's so true.
Yeah. So I'd say that there's going to be a time when the world makes sense again, when it is far easier to cultivate romantic relationships for those that are single. But I guess I would just want to say, you know, we see you. It's hard. It's okay that it's hard. And that there may be opportunities to, you know, it's almost like you are legally prohibited from dating. So now what do you do? You know, so it's, if you don't get a date this weekend, it's not your fault. It's the quarantine's fault. So now what are you going to do at that time? I don't know if that feels too insensitive, but I just wonder how we can reframe those situations in a way that allows us to do some really valuable self-work.
I just had a thought on that. I don't know if this will hold up, and I don't know if this is a metaphor or an analogy, but it's like building a house. Like if we were going to build a house right now, we're in the like architect drawing phase. Like, let's just design it. How many rooms do we want? And, you know, is there a garage? And is, you know, it's kind of like we're, maybe you could use this time as doing the design work of what do I want a relationship to look like? What do I want in a partner? What's kind of my criteria? What's important to me? You know, doing that self-awareness work of what do I need? What would be a good partnership for me? What would be a good complement to me? And designing your future a little bit with this opportunity or downtime, but getting a little more clarity around where am I headed? Who do I need in my life? Who do I want in my life? And it could also be like, what am I done with? Right? I'm not going to repeat that again. I want to intentionally do something different coming out of this. So maybe it's a design phase for you of looking at relationships in that context.
Part of, I think, what you and I are both getting at is that if you feel like you need this time to be productive toward not being single as a single person, then I think most of that productivity lies in introspection. It lies in doing some self-work in terms of what kind of person do I want to be? What type of relationship am I pursuing? And are there ways for me to lean into that in the space of quarantine? And if not, just recognizing that this is a temporary season. But again, I think we circle back to this idea with some frequency. Certainly, you know, recognize that pressure to not be single is coming from somewhere. Now, maybe it comes from a perfectly authentic place inside you that says, you know, no, I'm ready to not be single anymore. But also recognize that pressure to be productive, to be, it's like, oh, well, if you're single, you need to be working on not being single. That is a very culturally embedded idea. To be of value, you have to be coupled. You have to be, you know, connected to a relationship. I mean, heck, we've got a podcast that's focusing on relationships. So again, we could understand where that pressure comes from. But certainly it's something that we give you full permission to challenge, that, you know, just because you are single doesn't mean you need to be pouring all of your time and energy, especially in the context of quarantine, into not being single.
Yeah, the design process might be, I'm good by myself, and I can let this part of the pressure go. Yeah, great point.
I would love for this to be a season, and maybe this can be the topic of our next show, which is like, how do we cultivate depth of relationship in non-romantic ways? Because I think that is something, and I'll say with some gender bias here, that is something that is especially difficult for guys who have not been given the same kind of freedom to to really dive into male relationships with any depth. It feels like everything has to be, you know, around beers and a ball game or something like that. It doesn't feel like there's the same space for us to say, hey, I love you and I care about you and I want to be connected to you. And so I'd love to explore this idea further, but just recognize that, you know, if you're okay with dating, if you're okay with being single and okay with those types of things, that what we're talking about, these degrees of, you know, creating space with intentionality, asking what we need out of a particular interaction, and then leaning into ways to draw ourselves into deeper connection, that those all apply toward non-romantic relationships. Obviously, the content's going to look different. The outcomes are going to look different, but they still point us in the same direction, which is that, you know, deeper attachment and being seen, heard, and known.
Yeah, exactly. So good. Yeah.
So that'll do it for us here today. We look forward to continuing to connect with you. Again, I'm James Cochran, and you can find information about my practice at talkingwithjames.com.
And I'm Ginger Rothis, and I am at compassionfix.com.
And right now we're doing a thing where we're coming out a couple times a week. We're coming out a couple times a week, one, because I've got the time to do it, but also because we've talked about this idea of, you know, Ginger and I have got the Friday show, but bringing in spaces for this kind of chorus of voices that maybe allow some unique perspectives. So sometimes on Tuesdays, you'll hear some other folks. So that should be when new episodes come out, or Tuesdays and Fridays. But we are glad that you're here with us and look forward to connecting with you soon.
Yeah. Thank you all. Be well.